has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact me, your air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. Thank you for listening.
Benjamin, I hope you listen to Community Radio KBOO 90.7.
Today on Wings, Mayan Weaving Revival in Guatemala, following an era of genocidal repression against the indigenous people.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
In a small town in Guatemala, indigenous Mayan women are reviving an ancient skill. Anna Catherine Brigida reports for Wings.
It's an overcast Tuesday afternoon in Santiago Zacatepeques, a small town about an hour from Guatemala City and a half hour from colonial tourist town Antigua. Of the roughly 30,000 residents, about 80% are indigenous Mayans from the Cachiquel community. Weaving has been part of their culture for centuries, but lately, fewer and fewer women know how to weave the traditional Mayan textiles.
No está bien el choco y tiene que volver a hacer.
Aquí está todo enredado.
A teacher gives instructions to her students learning how to weave. You take two, leave one, and take two, she tells them, explaining how to guide and arrange the threads. The group of women sit on plastic chairs in front of backstrap looms, a type of weaving tool typical in Mayan culture. The backstrap loom is simple, and it can be easily taken anywhere. It's been an important part of Mayan culture for centuries. Mayan women often set it up in their home to weave, and years ago, they could also take it to the fields, or anywhere else where they wanted to work on their weaving. This group of women is learning to maneuver the backstrap loom to weave traditional patterns. Some are dressed in skirts and traditional Mayan blouses called huipiles. Others wear casual jeans and t-shirts. They all work in quiet concentration. Children play in the corner while their moms are hard at work. Occasionally, a light banging sound cuts through the quiet as one woman grabs the beater by each side. That's one of the sticks in the middle of the loom, and pulls it down forcefully to keep the thread closely packed.
En años anteriores, la vida aquí fue muy difícil.
27-year-old Hilda Coralia Mecoricote is one of the women in the group learning how to weave. Unfortunately, her mother wasn't able to teach her.
Years ago, life was very difficult for us. My mom went to work in Guatemala City at a young age without knowing Spanish. It was very difficult for her to leave her town and go to the capital. Her mom died when she was really young, so she didn't have anyone to teach her to weave.
Igual desde pequeñas nos mandaron a trabajar a la capital, entonces
for us, me and my sisters, it was the same reason. They sent us to the capital at a young age, so the tradition of weaving was lost in my family for that reason.
Se perdió el tejido, se perdió en mi familia por esa razón.
As a young girl, Hilda worked cleaning houses for Guatemala City's wealthy families. It was there that she was first exposed to the discrimination that many indigenous Guatemalans face. And this discrimination was directly related to her clothing. She worked with other girls cleaning houses. But unlike Hilda, these girls were non-indigenous Guatemalans, sometimes referred to as Ladinos. As Hilda recalls her experience years later, it still upsets her.
Sí. Fue un poco... No puedo con eso. Fue duro. Cuando yo fui a trabajar a la
It was really difficult. When I went to work in the capital, they made me take off my traditional clothing and they forced me to use a uniform, even though the other workers who were Latinas didn't use a uniform. Just me, because I am indigenous.
No usan uniform, solo yo. Por ser indígena.
The experience made Hilda feel ashamed of her culture. She started to reject her indigenous roots. She lashed out against them, in a way that many teenagers rebel against the traditions and values they are taught in their childhood, especially when society makes them feel different. So around the age of 16, Hilda stopped wearing skirts and huipiles. Instead, she opted for jeans and t-shirts.
My mom was not really in agreement with my decision, but it was starting to become more common in Santiago. Some people started to see it as normal, since not as many people wear traditional clothes. She started to accept it with time, and the rest of my family never said anything.
But like many teenagers, Hilda soon outgrew this phase. She slowly began to change her opinion about wearing traditional Mayan clothes. She got married and moved back to Santiago Zacatepeques with her husband. Now she has 2 children, ages 4 and 5. Once back in Santiago, Hilda reconnected with her roots. She started thinking about her children and what she wants to pass on to them. And as she started to think about this, she began wearing huipiles again. On the day I spoke to her, she was wearing a purple, blue, and green huipil with jewels around the collar and a striped skirt.
Tengo 27 años. Y la verdad fue un poco difícil porque...
Now I'm 27, and the truth is, it was hard for me, because in my adolescence, I lost myself trying to be accepted. For a long time, I stopped wearing traditional clothes because the racism here is so, so strong. When someone is looking for acceptance, sometimes they do things just because. Not too long ago, I started to realize how important it is to have a history, and how great it is to be an indigenous person and the great value that we have.
Many indigenous Guatemalan women never learned to weave for the same reasons as Hilda: discrimination, urban migration, and the intergenerational loss of the practice. Indigenous Guatemalan women are among the most poor and vulnerable in the country. Now, more and more women have to work to support their families. After a long day's work, they may not have time to work on weaving a tablecloth or a huipil, a traditional Mayan blouse. Many women also stopped weaving during the country's civil war, from 1960 to 1996. During that time, indigenous people were targeted by the military, which carried out massacres and forced disappearances in these communities. Some had to flee to the mountains to keep themselves safe. This meant weaving was no longer a priority. The loss of the tradition becomes more prominent over generations. For young Guatemalan women, if your mother never learned to weave, you won't have anyone to teach you. Somewhere between 40 and 50% of Guatemala's population identifies as Mayan. Their ancestors built the vast Mayan Empire and made contributions to art, astronomy, and mathematics that are still important to this day. Mayan civilization stretched from southeastern Mexico to western El Salvador and Honduras, and covered all of current-day Guatemala and Belize. The Mayans built vast temples and pyramids, many which have now become major tourist destinations in the region. Over the course of thousands of years, from around 2000 BC to 1500 AD, the Mayans created their own writing system, produced stunning art and architecture, and developed a respected method of studying astrology. Weaving is intertwined with the rich traditions of the Mayans in Guatemala. In the Mayan cosmovision, the goddess Ixchel is believed to have started weaving in order to set the world in motion. Ixchel is often depicted with a backstrap loom, similar to the ones that students like Hilda are learning to weave with. Hilda has learned to respect and appreciate these traditions, despite her short period of adolescent rebellion. But the history of Guatemala's indigenous people has not always been respected in the country. Since Spanish colonization of Guatemala in the 16th century, indigenous Guatemalans have been treated as second-class citizens. During the country's civil war, which lasted from 1960 to 1996, the indigenous population was particularly vulnerable. The conflict was a battle between a leftist guerrilla insurgency and a series of repressive military regimes backed by the United States. At that time, the Guatemalan state carried out a military campaign to systematically kill and disappear indigenous Guatemalans. The rationale behind the strategy was that all indigenous Guatemalans were part of the country's leftist guerrilla insurgency. Or, even if they weren't directly involved in the fighting, the military believed all indigenous people at least felt sympathetic to the leftist guerrillas. So at that time, wearing traditional Mayan clothes could be dangerous, since it was the easiest way to identify someone as indigenous. An estimated 200,000 people were killed during Guatemala's civil war, plus another 45,000 people were forcibly disappeared. A truth commission later found that more than 80% of the victims during the conflict were indigenous. It also found that the state was responsible for 93% of the human rights abuses committed during that time. Needless to say, the Civil War period was no easy time to be indigenous in Guatemala. Out of fear, many indigenous Guatemalans stopped wearing their traditional clothing. It was a way of survival. Mothers stopped teaching their daughters to weave, and now Guatemala is left with a generation unable to pass down this tradition. But women like Ilda are working to bring it back. They've decided to take classes to learn to weave. In indigenous communities, weaving is not just about making clothes. It's about carrying on history and traditions. It's about showing pride in who you are. It's a way to reconnect with your roots.
Para mí, tejer significa como recuperar lo que soy.
To me, weaving means recovering who I am and who we are as indigenous Kachikel women. I think that for me, that's the most important thing.
Un poco de historia otra vez a mi familia y no dejar que mis hijos olviden quiénes somos y de dónde venimos.
Since Guatemala signed a peace accord agreement that ended the civil war in 1996, indigenous Guatemalans have slowly started to shake off the fear of repression that stuck with them through that period and in the years after. A series of human rights trials has been a key part in making indigenous Guatemalans feel like they belong in their own country. One of the most important cases is the genocide trial of former dictator Efraín Ríos Montt. In 2013, Ríos Montt faced a long trial where many indigenous people found the courage to testify. The former military general was found guilty of genocide for ordering massacres against indigenous Mayan people during the early 1980s. When the verdict was announced, the courtroom broke into applause. This soon turned into the chant, "Sí, hubo genocidio," which means, yes, there was genocide. This is the case that many indigenous Guatemalans point to as the turning point for the country. Before, it was unheard of to see a military officer and a former president behind bars. But the celebrations were cut short. The forces of the military elites in the country were not so keen on letting go of the power they've long held. 10 days later, the verdict was ruled invalid based on a technicality.
On Wings, you are listening to a documentary about indigenous women in Guatemala using weaving to help heal themselves from the decades-long genocidal war against their people. After his conviction for genocide was overturned on a technicality, former President Ríos Montt was again put on trial, this time in a closed courtroom. He died of a heart attack at age 91 before that trial was complete. But the term genocide was understood to have been proven. Again, here's producer Anna Catherine Brigida.
As is often the case during a war, rape and sexual violence were used as tools of repression against women. One case in particular stands out for its importance to indigenous women. In 1992, the Guatemalan military murdered and disappeared a group of men who were defending their land against exploitation. This was in a town called Sepur Zarco, a Mayan Quiché community in the Guatemalan department of Izabal. After killing the husbands, the military officers then forced the wives to become their servants. These women served as both house workers and sex slaves. More than three decades later, some of the military officers were put on trial. In 2016, two high-ranking military officers were convicted of crimes against humanity for rape, murder, and slavery in the Sepur Zarko case. It was the first conviction for sex slavery as a war crime. The verdict was praised by the international community as an important step that helped to strengthen the rule of law for the rights of indigenous women in Guatemala. But there is still a long way to go. The country has some of the highest rates of domestic violence and femicide in the world. Life is even harder for indigenous women. They have a higher chance of being sick, illiterate, and poor than their non-indigenous counterparts. In the Guatemalan context, weaving can be an act of resistance for indigenous women. This is a resistance that dates back to the colonization by the Spanish.
It is resistance what we are doing because they even teach us in school that before the Spanish arrived, we Mayans were naked. But it's a lie because in history and in the archaeological sites, there is proof. Our clothing is something that they couldn't destroy. But if we look at our history, this is something that they wanted to erase. All of the evidence that we already had our own clothes and that we were civilized. According to them, they wanted to make us believe that we didn't have anything, that we were ignorant and that we were removed from our civilization. But it's a lie, because we were already clothed when the Spanish came. So with our huipil, we guard our history and something that they couldn't destroy.
Entonces nuestro huipil, pues ahí guardamos toda la historia también de nosotros, algo que ellos no pudieron destruir. Sí.
That was Martha Julia, the instructor at the weaving school in Santiago Zacatepeques. The school is a project started by the Women's Association for the Development of Zacatepeques, known by the Spanish acronym AFEDES. The organization is dedicated to supporting indigenous women, and it has launched a range of initiatives to promote the tradition of weaving in Mayan communities. Since the school began more than a decade ago, AFEDES has helped 1,500 women learn to weave. This current session has about a dozen students. They meet on Tuesdays and Fridays for 3 hours from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. While they are in class, the women work diligently and patiently hunched over their looms. The progress made in one class can seem small, just a few inches added to the cloth napkins each student was working on. Weaving requires a lot of patience. It's a process that cannot be rushed. The instructor, Martha Julia, paces around the room, looking out for any student who may be struggling. She instructs one student to adjust her technique. Her pupil listens attentively, making the suggested alterations to her method. Of the entire group, it's Martha Julia who has the most patience. She knows just how hard weaving can be when you are just starting out. She was one of the first students to take the class through AFEDES back in 2009.
Se requiere de mucha paciencia, pero no.
It requires a lot of patience, but it's not difficult. All errors have solutions.
Martha Julia was fascinated with Mayan textiles as a young girl. It's this memory that drew her to the class. Weaving was something she had always wanted to learn, but neither her mother nor her grandmother knew how, so they couldn't pass the tradition on to her.
Yo de niña sí tuve ese deseo de tejer. Tuve una tía.
When I was a young girl, I always wanted to learn to weave. I had an aunt who was my uncle's wife, and she did know how to weave. I told her that I wanted to learn, and she said, okay, buy your materials, and I can teach you. But my family didn't have much money, so I didn't have the opportunity to buy the materials and learn to weave. But as a young girl, I always had this restlessness of wanting to weave, but never having the opportunity to learn. Because in my family, no one, not my mother or my grandmother, knows how to weave.
Entonces, cuando se me dio la oportunidad de aprender, yo aproveché y aprendí.
What Martha Julia really wanted to learn was how to weave her own huipil, the traditional woven shirt for Mayan women. It can take a weaver between 3 to 6 months, or even longer, to weave just one huipil, depending on how long she spends weaving each day. A hand-woven huipil in a market can cost up to 2,000 quetzales. That's about $270. In a country where the monthly minimum wage is just a bit more than that, at $340 a month, a huipil is no small purchase.
Me gustaban mucho esos huipiles, pero por lo mismo en la economía nunca, de niña nunca tuve un huipil.
I always loved huipiles, but because of my family's economic situation, I never had a nice huipil as a girl. The idea of learning to make my own huipil always caught my attention, and that was why I wanted to learn to weave, because if I wasn't able to buy one, then maybe I could make my own.
Por eso fue eso mi deseo de aprender. Para yo poder, si no puedo poder comprar, pero yo puedo hacer.
If you've ever seen a tourism ad for Guatemala, you've probably seen a huipil and just didn't realize it. They are hand-woven shirts, typically with bright colors, red, pink, blue, green, and yellow, usually with a combination of floral and geometric figures. Indigenous Guatemalan women are often featured wearing them in images promoting the country. From these advertisements and promotions, you would think that wearing a huipil is viewed in a positive light. But the reality in Guatemala is different. Many Mayan women report stories of harassment and discrimination just for wearing a huipil. One of the most common insults is to call an indigenous woman by the name of Maria. It's a common name in Guatemala, so why is it an insult? Well, calling a woman by Maria, if that's not actually her name, is a way of erasing her identity. It's saying that all indigenous women are the same, and it's not even worth learning her name.
Sufro, he sufrido eso y sufrí en camiones, en buses.
I suffer and have suffered discrimination. In buses, when I travel to Guatemala City or Antigua, without fail, someone always calls me Maria. But that is just part of the racism that we live here in Guatemala, as indigenous women, unfortunately. Outside of the Guatemalan borders, the indigenous woman is the face of Guatemala. We are the image of Guatemala, but within the country, we are discriminated against.
Despite being called Maria and other insults, many Mayan women choose to invest the time and money into a huipil. Its cultural significance is invaluable. To a foreigner, it might seem like a huipil is just a huipil. A non-indigenous woman buying one of these blouses would probably choose one based on the design that she finds most appealing. But a Mayan woman chooses her huipil based on her heritage and community. Each region of Guatemala has its own design and color pattern. The design of Santiago Zacatepeques features rows of circular shapes that represent the sun and the moon. Other rows depict either lines of rabbits or quetzals. The rabbit is a nod to Mayan goddess of weaving, Itzel, who is often depicted with a rabbit. The quetzal is a bird native to Guatemala, green with a red breast and a long flowing tail. In the huipil from Santiago, red is the dominant color, with some hints of blue, green, pink, purple, yellow, and orange. As fewer and fewer women from Santiago Zacatepeques know how to weave, the region's particular huipil design is becoming less common. Some women have started to buy designs from other regions because they don't know how to weave their own regional design themselves.
El problema que estamos viendo ahorita y con tanta tristeza miramos que poco a poco se está terminando.
The problem that we are seeing now, and it's with great sadness, is that little by little, the huipiles from specific regions are fading, like here in Santiago. The majority of people are now wearing other types of huipiles that are machine-made and that aren't made by hand weaving. That's what motivates me to keep weaving, to not lose our culture, because if we don't keep weaving, then at some point, weaving will end, and we will just have the story of it. We don't want that to happen, so that's why I advocate for weaving wherever I can. That's why I help women, however I can, so that weaving is not forgotten.
Pues yo ese impulso del tejido donde yo pueda, pues yo ayudo a mis compañeras y todo eso porque no me gustaría ver esto ya olvidado ya.
After learning to weave through the classes organized by Aferes, Martha Julia became one of the teachers at the school. She has now been teaching classes for about 3 years. During the course of the 4-month class, the students first make a table napkin. Then they work on making part of a huipil. Technology poses another threat to this centuries-long tradition. These textiles are meant to be one of a kind, with each woman giving each piece her own personal touch. Mass production of these textiles loses an important part of the culture. The designers that mass produce these textiles sometimes mix patterns from different regions that would not go together in a traditional Mayan textile. Sometimes they take the patterns without giving credit to the indigenous woman who wove it. Those are just some of the complaints the students have about machine-made textiles. Not to mention, they are often poorer quality and wear out more quickly.
We've started this initiative so that our textiles could be protected, and so that our history can be protected, and so that no one can take from us what belongs to us.
Keeping the tradition alive is really about the next generation. Students like Ilda wonder what they are going to leave to their children, and grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Will their kids know about Itzel, the Mayan goddess of weaving? Will they know the difference between a huipil from their hometown of Santiago Zacatepeques and other regions of Guatemala? Will they remember how their grandmothers and great-grandmothers had to stop wearing their traditional clothes out of fear during the Civil War? Most importantly, will they wear their indigenous clothing with pride and knowledge in where they came from? Their mothers certainly hope so.
I think weaving is so beautiful, and it's something that we shouldn't lose. That's why I want to learn. On the one hand, to know how, and on the other hand, to be able to pass it down to my kids, and if God allows, to my grandkids as well, so that this isn't lost.
Those are Ilda's two children. They are fighting over whether or not they know how to weave. Emily, Ilda's four-year-old daughter, insists she does know how. Her five-year-old brother says he doesn't. Emily is a real talker. She tells me that she has a new baby cousin, that her brother is afraid of heights, and that her mom always has to remind her that there's still a few months to go before her birthday. During the class, Emily mostly plays with her brother, but at one point, she sits close to her mom to try to help her. The problem is, Emily's a bit clumsy. She is only 4 years old. She spills all the threads out from the container where they were neatly packed. Her mom lightly scolds her and tells her to be more careful. So Emily sits up straighter, trying to behave herself. She rearranges the threads in the original box as a four-year-old would, trying to shove them all in, but not in a particularly orderly way. They aren't quite as neatly packed as before, but her mom doesn't make too much of a fuss. Emily hands her mom the pink thread that she asks for, happy to be able to help out. She stares up at her mom as she weaves in quiet concentration. When Emily gets to be a few years older, that could be her sitting in front of the loom. Only she won't have to take classes through Afedis. She'll have her mom to teach her. Reporting for Wings, I'm Anna Catherine Brigida in Santiago Zacatepeques, Guatemala.
Anna Catherine Brigida filed that report from Guatemala. She is a longtime foreign correspondent across Latin America with a special interest in women's rights. For more information about this program or to hear it again, email wings@wings.org. Wings airs on community radio in at least 7 countries. Please contact your local community radio station to hear Wings shows there or recommend Wings for their playlist. Wings thanks all our supporters, including Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service. Thank you.
This is Norma Sylvester, the boogie cat. Meow, meow. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
Do you need some quiet mood music? Some soothing sounds?
Well, then never listen to Life During Wartime, because they just play really obnoxious DIY punk from local bands and international acts. Sometimes they have bands play live, and it's all with the yelling and the screaming and the I don't like my mom and dad or my teachers and all that kind of stuff. That's Life During Wartime, every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Tune into KBOO on Saturday, May 20th from 5 to 7 p.m. for a special broadcast of Apano's Voices of Change, Deepening Ties, Growing Power. It's an annual gathering of AAPI community to celebrate the past year, talk about future hopes, and be together. That's Apano's Voices.